Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. He's Lance Meadow. I'm John Schmelk. The phone number for you, 201-939-4513. Give us a call, talk some Giants football, or on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat if you want to check out the show that way. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by John Talty from AL.com. The Alabama Media Group covers Alabama, and their college sports editor knows a lot about the Alabama Crimson Tide, so he'll be with us in a few minutes. But until we get to him, Lance, Mike Mayock always each year comes out with his top five draft prospects. His initial list always comes out in February. Then he updates it after the combine. It took him a couple weeks.
Well, there's a lot of players he observed.
No question, and they're out. So we'll just go through some of the changes. We have this list on Giants.com as well. He leaves his quarterback top five the same, and ironically, or I don't know if ironically, but surprisingly, he has DeShone Kizer as his number one guy, Watson 2, Trubisky 3. He has said, though, he doesn't think any of these guys will contribute right away, and all these guys on the list, including Mahomes at 4, Davis Webb at 5, are going to be projects.
Yeah, I think that's the consensus for just about everybody that's evaluating these quarterbacks. However, from a number of people that I've talked to, they feel that Watson showed them something at the combine and even at the pro day for Clemson, and that if they were picking as of today, they think Watson would be the first quarterback taken. So I'm a little bit surprised that he has Watson second. I thought maybe he would be with the consensus and put him first.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is predictive as it is necessarily
in terms of his overall.
If he was a GM, who he would pick first. Exactly.
Gotcha.
For the running backs, Leonard Fournette rising to number one from number two. Dalvin Cook falling from one to three. So he has Fournette, McCaffrey at two, Cook at three, Kamara and Samaje Perine, Paul Dottino's guy, at number five. His wide receivers have a couple changes at the bottom. Stowe's Corey Davis, Mike Williams, John Ross at the top. No surprise there. O.J. Howard and Njoku, the top two tight ends. And then Evan Ingram, Gerald Everett, and George Kittle, the next three, which just kind of seems to be the consensus out there. No surprise. Jake Butt, because he's hurt, he's on his special exception list. Offensive tackles, Lance, also really hasn't changed a whole lot. I think it's exactly the same. Ramchick, one for him. Bowles, two. Taylor Moten, a guy you guys had an interview and talked about on Monday at 5. Forrest Lamp, the top interior offensive lineman. Ironically, he has Cam Robinson as a guard, not a tackle, which is something different than what a lot of other people think.
And we will hear more about Cam Robinson momentarily because he is part of that Alabama class.
Absolutely. We'll hear from John Talty in a second. We have him on hold. I want to run through the rest of this list real quick before we get to him. At the edge spot, Myles Garrett, no surprise, number one. He's put Solomon Thomas up to two from four previously, which is not a surprise. A lot of people think he is now going to be a top 10 pick given his versatility and production at Stanford. His linebackers, another Alabama Crimson Tide, Reuben Foster still at number one. We'll talk with John about that in just a second. Cornerback, obviously with the injury to Sidney Jones, he's dropped off the list. Everyone else has kind of moved up, and Gary Conley, who had a big combine from Ohio State, has moved into that top five for him. And then he is Jabril Peppers, believe it or not, as his number one safety in the class ahead of Jamal Adams and Malik Hooker, which to me is surprising.
Well, he's a versatile player. Remember, there's talk about where he may fit in within NFL schemes. Is he a linebacker? Is he a safety? And so forth. So we'll see how that pans out. But he's somebody also jumped out at the combine in terms of his performance. And it's no surprise that he has a lot of different exceptions at the cornerback list because there's so much depth, there's so much options at that position.
All right, let's get to our guest. If you want to check out our interview, go to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app. If you're watching on Twitter, thank you for joining us. You can watch the rest of the program there. And now we are joined by John Talty. He's the college sports editor and a writer for Alabama Media Group. And, of course, that means you cover the Alabama Crimson Tide football program. John, you got John Schmelk and Lance Meadow up here in East Rutherford, New Jersey. How are you on this fine afternoon?
Good. I appreciate you guys having me on today.
Hey, thanks for joining us. And obviously, spring practice has started for you guys. We appreciate you carving out some time for us, John. I know it's busy down there. Let's start with the Alabama class in general. If you were to bullet point to describe this class as a whole, how would you describe it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really strong. I mean, I think there's a very high likelihood. You know, you have four to five first-round guys going. This year, there's a lot of high-end guys. You know, they had last year, I think, was a little bit disappointing in some ways. You know, I think there are multiple guys, you know, like A'shaun Robinson and Jaren Reed that people thought were going to go in the first round. Reggie Ragland and all those guys flipped to the second round outside of Ryan Kelly, who went to the Colts. So I think this year there's an expectation there'll be more guys taken in the first round out of Alabama. I think there's a pretty good chance you could see multiple top 10 picks. I'm sure we'll get into some of those guys, but I think it's, you know, it's going to be a high-level class of guys taken. I think you know, certainly could be the best group of, you know, in terms of colleges of guys taken in the first round or so.
Well, and this class has an opportunity to really set the tone on defense, John. And let's start with the top 10 that you just alluded to. Jonathan Allen, the defensive end. There's versatility there, but the question is, can he play on the outside and the inside when he gets to the NFL? How do you see that transition taking place as he moves from Alabama to the pros?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good question. And I think, you know, there's also certainly the injury kind of concerns of his shoulders and things like that. I mean, I think he was able to do a lot of different things at Alabama. I think he's a guy that, I think we saw this, you know, in the combine, that he's not necessarily going to blow you away with athleticism, things like that, but he's a smart kid. And he's pretty versatile in what he does. You know, they have moved him around a little bit on the line in the past. And so, yeah, I think he's going to transition pretty well. I don't really have much of a concern in terms of position or kind of those things, just because I think he's, you know, they've done different things with him in the past at Alabama, and he's been able to do well in pretty much all those, you know, regards. I'd have more concerns about the injuries, which I'm sure teams are kind of giving him a full rundown on right now, but I think he's going to be pretty effective pretty much no matter what he does. But certainly, you know, there's certain systems that he's going to fit in better than others.
How did his injury affect his play in college? I know he played through a lot of them, and obviously you're a defensive lineman. Shoulder, arm strength, all that sort of stuff is really important. You can easily get dinged up tackling running backs and, you know, things of that nature. How do you think that injury history will be looked at, and how did those injuries affect his performance and ability to stay on the field at Alabama?
Yeah, I mean, I think it affected him more a year ago than it did this past year. You know, it bothered him pretty much throughout the 2015 season, and just, you know, not too atypical from what other people do. I mean, he just played through it, and once he got through the season, you know, had surgery. And so this past year, I don't think it was as much of a concern, but certainly it's going to be something that people are going to, you know, go through. I know that we did a story at AL.com about just kind of his combine process, and you know, he went through like 15 MRIs or something like that. I mean, there's certainly teams are doing a kind of a deep look at those things. I mean, I think for me, I think he's going to be fine. I think the biggest concern is just going to be like long-term, how long he can hold up, you know, with arthritis and things like that. I mean, I think you're going to invest a top five pick, which I think most people kind of have him projected at least top 10 or so. I think he's in pretty much every mock draft. You know, that's a pretty huge investment, as you guys well know. And so whether he's going to kind of live out to that, you know, I think that would be my one concern just in terms of health. But I mean, he looked great this year. I mean, he really took a major step. I think last year, you know, he kind of, there, as I mentioned, you had guys like A'shaun Robinson and Jaron Reed, and he had all these kind of different defensive linemen. They went really deep, so he didn't have a chance to stand out as much as he did this past year, where he was the kind of the clear number one defensive lineman on that team and made a major impact in quite a few of their games. It was a big reason for that defense, you know, that they were able to go as far as they did. And so I don't think it had as big of an impact this past year, but certainly something that bears watching and something that NFL team docs and things like that are going to kind of spend a lot of time looking into.
Well, Jonathan Allen certainly stood out, as you mentioned, but I think over the last few years in general, probably one of the biggest challenges that NFL scouts have when they evaluate a team like Alabama is there's plenty of depth, there's plenty of playmakers, specifically on the defensive side of the ball, that it's hard to determine whether or not the player is succeeding as a result of the scheme or the player is succeeding as a result of his individual talent. So when you look at, and this is more of a generic question about the Alabama defense, when you look at all of these players this season, such as Allen, Dalvin Tomlinson, the linebackers, how much is their production a result of the scheme, do you think, versus actually what they can do as individuals?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. And I think, you know, one of the most common criticisms about Alabama's defense is related to the defensive backs and how they've kind of hit almost their ceiling. They've been coached up so well because Saban's, you know, defensive back, that's his specialty that, you know, but when they get to the NFL, it doesn't always work out. And, you know, certainly, you know, one of the guys most recently, D. Milliner, that was more towards, you know, because of injuries, certainly did not pan out for the Jets. And so, you know, it is a worthwhile question. I think you almost kind of have to take it on a case-by-case basis. I do think that the scheme and just the way that, you know, they coach him up can hide some deficiencies. But I think there's certain guys that kind of can rise above that. And I think Jonathan Allen is a good example of that. I also think that in some ways, and you mentioned, you know, Dalvin Tomlinson, I think some ways it almost covers up what a guy does do well. You know, I think Tomlinson, I think especially in the last month or so, is starting to get more attention. But he's a guy who was just really, really good for the majority of his career at Alabama, but never really got that much attention, in part because people just assume that Alabama's defense is going to be really good every year. And so, you know, he doesn't make as many flashy plays, and he kind of gets forgotten about. And Ryan Anderson's a little bit like that, too, at Alabama. So it kind of can go both ways, but I do think that it's there is some legitimacy to the criticism, and I think you just have to, you know, look when I'm sure the scouts and things like that are looking at film. They're trying to kind of look at what each person's individual role was, and, you know, whether it was just the scheme working really well, whether it was the fact that, you know, 1 through 11, they're really, really talented and can be better than most offenses that they faced, or whether it was kind of individual performance. So yeah, I think it just kind of depends on the player. And I think with this current Alabama defensive class, there are certain guys that I would feel better about than others in relation to that.
We're joined by John Talty, AL.com, Alabama Media Group, college sports editor, of course, writes about the Crimson Tide. John, I want to jump over to the I'll stick on the defensive side of the ball before we get to the guy Giant fans really want to hear about. I want to touch on Reuben Foster real quick. Two-part question. One, are there real character issues here with the whole thing that happened at the Combine, number one? And number two, do you think he can be a Mike linebacker in the pros, or do you think he's more of that, you know, typical 4-3 Will that wants to run and hit and needs to get a lot of protection from his defensive line?
Yeah, I mean, I think to answer your first question, I mean, I think that certainly there could be some character concerns. There are some things, you know, that he's done, you know, over his time that would probably be a little bit worrisome to outside. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of work done kind of researching his background. But from all my interactions with him, Moore was great. I always thought he was a pretty likable kid. I thought he was, you know, well-spoken and kind of knew what was going on, talking to different coaches and things like that at Alabama. They all really liked him and really didn't have anything negative to say about him. There are other guys, I think, in this group that have more character concerns than him. But I think that there's certainly some issues with that. You know, obviously being, you know, the only person to get kicked out of the combine is not a good look, and something that he has had to explain away a lot with, you know, different scouts and executives that came down to Alabama's pro day. And he's going to have to continue to explain that as he goes on team visits. You know, I think to answer your second question, I think it's a valid question. I always kind of thought, you know, watching him in high school and then, you know, when he got to Alabama, that he would be kind of more of that role rather than a middle linebacker. But, I mean, he did play really well last year in that role. And he, you know, even though there have been some concerns about kind of his X's and O's and his ability to grasp the playbook, he was really good as their signal caller. So I think that's led me to kind of question it a little bit more. I do think that he probably makes more sense, you know, in kind of a Will role. But, you know, I imagine that there's at least a chance he could be a middle linebacker, and kind of just, again, depends on scheme and just what you think he can do in that role for them.
John, I know early in his career there were concerns about his tackling technique because he suffered a number of stingers. How much of a concern has that been moving forward in his career? Because clearly when NFL executives, they look at the medical issues, the last thing they want to do is take a chance on a guy. He takes one more hit and then he misses significant time. Is that more of a thing that's behind him, or is that still somewhat of a prevalent issue?
Yeah, I think it's definitely mostly behind him. I think just the way that he hits, you know, there could be some concerns. But, I mean, it was a lot worse off a couple of years ago. I mean, we did a big story here just kind of looking back at this famous hit. I think it was on Leonard Fournette. And, you know, we had kind of doctors saying, like, he's kind of lucky almost that he didn't get paralyzed or broke some vertebrae just on based the way that he kind of put his head down and hit the guy. And so he's really gotten a lot better about, you know, his form, the way that he kind of positions his head when he tackles. I think that, you know, anytime you have just a massive hitter like Reuben, there could be some concerns. But I do think that, you know, there's been a lot of work, you know, internally to kind of better his form in that regard, because, you know, nobody wants a guy to be able to get knocked out or potentially permanently injured because of a bad tackle. And so there's been a lot of work done there, and I think he's a lot better off than he was a few years ago for sure.
All right, John, I want to stick on the defensive side of the ball. Tim Williams is someone that there are a lot of divergent opinions on him. Some people believe he really is a, you know, future excellent pass rusher that can, you know, bend and, you know, get around those offensive tackles. Other people I know are very disappointed with his show at the combine. They're not sure how athletic he's really going to be. Is he a stand-up rusher? Is he a 4-3 defensive end? What's your general take on Tim Williams and what his future might be in the National Football League?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because I think some of the concerns that people have, or a lot of the concerns that people had when he was going through the recruiting process, you know, when he was coming out of Louisiana, LSU never offered him. They didn't think he was big enough. They didn't think he'd be able to kind of put on enough weight to kind of make his framework. They didn't really know where to deal with him. And then, you know, Alabama brings him in, and he's, you know, really, I think, evolved this past year, but essentially has been their best pass rusher for the last 2 years or so. Personally, I really liked him. I think he is, you know, I didn't expect him to totally blow away people at the combine, so that doesn't really surprise me. I just, you know, having watched him for the last few years, he's very effective. And I think one of the most one of his strengths is just his mentality. I mean, he's a guy who, you know, refers to himself as an assassin. You know, when he talks about getting a sack, he says it's, you know, one shot, one kill. I mean, he's a guy who has that kind of mentality that I think is going to carry him far. I mean, certainly, you know, I don't doubt that there are valid concerns about whether, you know, he has the right frame, whether, as you said, whether he's going to be a, you know, hand in the dirt, whether he's going to be kind of a linebacker. I mean, you can kind of do different things with him. But I think that he's a guy that I really like. You know, if I were a team, especially picking in the latter half of the first round, you know, 20s and up, I think he's a guy that could be a really great value for them.
Talking with John Talty, who covers Alabama's football team, college sports editor and writer for Alabama Media Group. You alluded to earlier, John, some of this class with character issues, and Williams is one of those players, I think, that fits under that umbrella, given his past. How much is that a concern? And, you know, you brought out the fact that he's a great pass rusher, but what else can he bring to the table if you were to take a flyer on him in terms of maybe being on the field for some of the earlier downs where there's not pass rush situations?
Yeah, I mean, I do think there are character concerns for him, and I think they've, you know, been kind of well known for a while now. You know, he got arrested, you know, over the summer. There's kind of this funny incident about, they said that, you know, the weed they got caught with was from Brandon Chicken, and, you know, obviously Brandon Chicken didn't exist. But, you know, I do think that he is a little bit more mature than, you know, people give him credit for. I was personally impressed that he just kind of straight up came out and said, yeah, I failed drug tests at Alabama, and, you know, I kind of went through a process, and I know that he went through a rehab process at Alabama. And I think back to, you know, after Alabama lost the national championship to Clemson and going into that locker room, I mean, it was a stunned locker room. There are guys that are mad and cursing and screaming and, you know, refusing to talk to media. It was not a very fun scene for a lot of people. And Tim was the guy, more so than any other person on that team, that stepped up, that was encouraging his teammates, that was, you know, telling people that, you know, that they had a good run, that the young guys are the future. He answered every single question any media person had for him. And really, I think, showed a side Tim that a lot of people don't see. They just see, you know, the issues of marijuana and, you know, how he's gotten in trouble and kind of been in the doghouse at times of Alabama. And so I think there's another side of him that kind of shows him as a good teammate, a guy who I think is eager to kind of learn and improve. You know, I do think Tim made steps as a, you know, kind of in pass coverage and things like that this past year. You know, a year ago he was pretty much just a third down guy, just, you know, kind of pin back his ears and just let him run, and he had a lot of, you know, very effective in that role a year ago. I think this past year showed some progress. Still, as I said, I think his number one thing you're getting from him is pass rush ability. But I do think that he can be effective in different roles, certainly as a young player. I mean, I think you could throw him on special teams right away. I think he'd be effective in that way. You know, I think you can work with him as a pass coverage guy. I think he is athletic enough to be effective in that role. But there are some concerns, I think, with that, and that would be something that you'd have to work with him on. If you do want him to be, you know, a 2-3 down guy, you know, each series and not just a third down, come in and just rush the passer.
Final guy in defense that I want to touch on with you, John, before I head over to the offensive side of the ball. And you're right, this is a really impressive class, and we appreciate you giving us the time to kind of go through all these guys, because you're probably going to have 5 or 6 first-round picks here. And the guy I want to touch on last might be the first member of the Crimson Tide off the board in the first round. That's Marshon Lattimore, who, in a great cornerback class, many consider him to be the top corner on the board. He blew up the combine. Ran a 4.36. I mean, this kid's got it all. Do you see a future shutdown corner in the NFL? And if NFL teams have something to worry about with him, what do you think it would be?
Well, Lattimore went to Ohio State.
I don't know
Humphrey.
How.
Yeah, Marlon Humphrey.
Marlon Humphrey. Yeah. I'm sorry about that. My fault. I'm sorry, John.
You're good. Humphrey is an interesting question because, you know, I'll have to admit that I was never totally sold and impressed by him. But, you know, I always like to say that, you know, scouts and other people seem to know a lot more than I do. So I like to try to keep, you know, what I see somewhat in perspective, because it seems like he is kind of trending up, and based on kind of his combine performance otherwise, I've seen some people have him, you know, top 10 even now. I have some concerns, and I think this is one of the things that we talked about earlier, is kind of whether defense covers up issues. I feel like the help that he had, you know, at safety and kind of the pass rush that they had the last 2 years really helped cover up some deficiencies that Marlon has. I mean, he seemed to get burned a pretty good amount. It seemed like most interesting, I mean, he was probably the most highly regarded defensive back on the team this past year, at least as a cornerback. And it seemed like teams would like to go after him a good amount, especially early. It seems like to kind of see if they could burn him early on, go after him a few times, see if they could kind of rat him a little bit. And nobody really had that much success against Alabama's defense this year just because of how much talent they have. But there are some concerns for me. I mean, he's got legitimate track-level speed. I mean, he was a very, very good high school track star. He's been effective at the college level in track. So he's very, you know, very fast. He has pretty good size. But I would have, out of the main defensive guys, you know, between Williams, Foster, Allen, and Humphrey, I would have the most concerns just from watching him for the last few years about Humphrey.
See, that's what happens, John, when you have two windows open on your Internet Explorer and they're side by side and you open the wrong one. Go ahead, Lance.
Well, John, let's transition to offense. It seems as if we took a year and a Sunday to go over the defense because there's so much stock. But John alluded to this earlier, the fact that Giants fans are foaming at the mouth over a potential possibility that O.J. Howard, the tight end, is going to be around at 23 when the Giants select. I don't think that's going to happen, but that doesn't mean we can't talk about him. Clearly, he's a talent, but I want to read you a quote, John, off of NFL.com from an NFC general manager, because if there's any question, maybe it's more about the off-the-field or the mentality of O.J. Howard. And he said the following: Alabama recruited a shiny toy, but Lane Kiffin never really knew what to do with it. I don't worry about the talent at all. He could be an all-pro. I just need to know if he loves football, end quote. What's your reaction when somebody maybe questions his dedication and his love of football with respect to O.J. Howard?
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of understand it because, you know, O.J. has this very cool demeanor, and he doesn't really let his emotions get the best of him anyway. And I think sometimes that's how, like, you know, as even like a writer, I think sometimes even I fall guilty to it. Sometimes you see the guy, the fiery guy is the one that we interpret loves football the most.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
the kind of the guy who kind of just is a little bit quieter, is kind of just not monotone, but I mean, he kind of just keeps that an even keel for most of the point. And I think sometimes, I think that's maybe in part why he's getting penalized. I mean, I've never got the sense that he didn't love football. I think that certainly it's been a passion of his for a really long time. He's gone through some trials, tribulations, through high school and college and things like that. And I think that, you know, I've always seen a good commitment, you know, from him. I know that his teammates really liked him, and I think he was kind of more of a quiet leader. But, you know, if you've only met him once or twice, I could see the fact that he's not going to be all fired up. You can interpret maybe that he doesn't care enough or doesn't love football or whatnot.
You know, it's funny, John. To me, O.J. Howard's the opposite of most of these tight end prospects coming out, where you know what they can do as a receiver, but they were never asked to block, so you have to project him in that area. Howard's a guy that was asked to block, wasn't really asked to be a big part of their passing game. We saw him at the Senior Bowl. How much upside do you think he has as a receiver to go along with what I'm sure you think is a pretty elite blocking skill already?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's tremendous upside. And I think you saw it in spurts. You know, if you go back 2 years ago to the national championship game against Clemson, he had the monster game and MVP. Yeah. And I think, you know, they saw that kind of showed you a little bit. I mean, it's not like he had to even do anything. There was just a terrible bust on one of them, and he just kind of blew past the guy. But certainly there is that ability. And I think, you know, part of it is just, I mean, look, this past year, you know, with, they had a freshman quarterback in Jalen Hurts, and, you know, really one of the first main dual threat guys they've had. And to be honest, he just wasn't a very good passer. And so, you know, OJ, and I think a lot of their wide receivers and otherwise were somewhat limited just based on that Hurts wasn't a great pass, and they really limited what they did with him. They did a lot of kind of short, quick throws, and they didn't feature, you know, Howard as much as, you know, as people probably would have liked. So I think there's a tremendous upside for him. As you mentioned, he had to do a lot of blocking, did a very good job in that. He improved a lot in that area over his career at Alabama, and I think, you know, he's well-served to take that next step. Obviously, very athletic. He's got good size, and, you know, as you kind of hit on, like, there's some guys like Evan Engram who are really just a wide receiver and a tight end, you know, just being called a tight end. I think he really is kind of more of a true tight end that he can block if you need him to, but obviously has the speed, the athleticism, the hands to be a major kind of pass-catching target as well.
Talking with John Talty, college sports editor, writer for the Alabama Media Group, as we're talking about Alabama football prospects coming up in the upcoming draft. Where have you been hearing, John, that he will go in the first round? Because in terms of his stock, I've seen projections across the board, but what is a realistic number that you think O.J. Howard is going to land in the first round?
Yeah, it's a great question. I wouldn't be surprised at this point if he goes top 15. I think, as you guys know, I mean, all it takes is one team to fall in love, and I think that there is going to be that team in the top 15 or so that falls in love with just his athleticism and his, you know, kind of raw potential. I mean, he's the guy that, you know, in theory could be a kind of Travis Kelce type that really is effective and can really open up different things in your passing game. So that's where I see him. I mean, weird things happen all the time. I mean, there could be that team that loves him at 13 and then a guy drops and then nobody from 13 to 20 likes him. You know, it all just kind of depends on position and needs and things like that. But that's what it seems like. I think he is, you know, seems to be trending upward in the different talk and things like that. And so that's where I see him at right now. But, I mean, there's still – he's got, what, a month or so to go until the draft happens. So there's still a lot that can happen, a lot of guys that can go up and down. And we'll certainly see how that all plays out.
And two of the most recent mock drafts that came out, I think Todd McShay's was one of them. They actually meant as a top five, top six player, which for a tight end would be unprecedented. Yeah. But he's really a spotless prospect in terms of everything he can do. Final one for me, John, and I'm sure Lance will have one more for you. Cam Robinson, the offensive lineman. Mike Mayock, we talked about earlier, sees him as more of a guard. I think most other people see him as a right tackle starter floor with, if he can figure out some of his inconsistencies, maybe he can be a left tackle. And I think that's the word that I've heard a lot when they talk about Cam Robinson is inconsistency. One game he looks great, the next game he's all over the place. Do you think he has that ceiling as a left tackle in the league? And do you agree with that analysis that it was really a game-to-game situation with him and you never knew what player you were going to get showing up?
Yeah, I think there's certainly some truth to that. And I mean, I think is a ceiling as a left tackle? Yeah, I guess. I mean, a ceiling to me is, I mean, if talking absolute best case scenario, then yeah, in theory, he could be a left tackle. I think that he probably makes more sense in a different role because, you know, I think one of his absolute strengths at Alabama was run blocking, and he's just, I mean, a really powerful guy in that regard. His pass blocking was a bit of a struggle. He got beat a few times. I mean, penalties were an issue for him throughout the year. It seemed like he made a lot of kind of silly, stupid mistakes. And the other thing that I've heard from talking to different people is that it just seemed like all year he was almost a little tentative. Sometimes, I don't know about avoiding injuries, but it just seemed like at times, as you said, the level of play was a bit inconsistent, and he wasn't always maybe giving 100%, or it seemed like he took some plays off and things like that. So I think that would certainly be a concern for me. I mean, this is a guy who a year or two ago people thought might be a top-10 pick. He seems to have been really trending down and really had a disappointing junior year. So I think, you know, whether it's a right tackle, left guard type thing, that might be a better role for him. But, you know, in theory, he's got the size and, you know, to be a left tackle, I think it would just kind of take a couple of things clicking and, you know, for him to really be able to give a consistent level of play every time out for him to be able to be an NFL left tackle. But I think more likely it's going to be a move to a different position. And I think that's in part why you've seen him kind of trend downward in the last couple of months in terms of mock drafts and projections.
It's interesting when it comes to Cam Robinson, John, because from a lot of the projections I've seen, he's actually been compared to current Giants left tackle Eric Flowers, who came out of Miami. And when you look at Cam Robinson, you mentioned, you know, maybe it's still up in the air where he projects, but where does he need to improve when it comes to technique? Is it footwork? Is it upper strength? Is it hands? Where do you see that there's room for him to grow as he tries to make the transition into the NFL?
I mean, I think you could say all of the above. I mean, I think certainly it seemed like he was, you know, out of place at times when there's pass rushing opportunities. I mean, he got beat up a few times bad in SEC play. And I mean, in his defense, there's some absolutely great pass rushers in the SEC. But I do think his footwork is an issue. I think his hand placement at times was an issue, especially on pass rushing opportunities. So, I mean, I think those are probably two of the bigger key areas for him to improve. I mean, upper body strength in general, I think, is pretty strong. I mean, he's a guy, again, who, you know, when you got him out kind of running and able to run block, I mean, he was incredibly effective. And, you know, a year before when Derrick Henry was a Heisman, they ran behind him a lot, and it was very effective. So I think he's pretty good in that regard. I think that, again, the biggest issues are going to be his pass-blocking opportunities. And so, you know, feet, footwork, hand placement, things like that, being able to just – I think his reaction time is almost a little slow at times. So those are the biggest things for me that I think if he's going to be a left tackle, he absolutely has to get better in those areas, especially if he – and then for the Giants, I mean, you would need a strong guy in that spot to protect Eli. And so I don't think he's quite there yet.
John, fantastic stuff. Great information. We appreciate you giving us the time today. Enjoy spring practice, and we'll talk to you down the road, all right?
Thanks a lot, John.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you, John. John Talty from AL.com, Alabama Media Group, their college sports editor, and, of course, he covers Alabama football as well. 201-939-4513. We have a couple calls on the line. We'll get to you in just a second, Lance. Just want to touch on two items that I stress are not official, but they're out there in the media, so I will mention them real briefly. There are reports that the Giants are going to sign both Sean Drone, the running back from the San Francisco 49ers, a good receiver out of the backfield, runs between the tackles. And then you also have reports out there that the Giants are going to re-sign linebacker Keenan Robinson, someone we've talked about over the course of the year as well. So just something to throw out there.
And if Keenan Robinson does return and it becomes official, you're talking about continuity again, John. Returning the main linebacking core from 2016, and now you got three quarters of your defensive linebacking. I think from the Giants management staff's perspective, given how the defense produced, was a top 10 unit last year, you want to be able to carry that over into 2017. And that seems to be, if you're trying to connect the dots this offseason, to me, my biggest takeaway is clearly they're very happy with the results, the turnaround from 15 to 16, and if you could give a top 10 defense to Eli Manning as his window narrows down, I don't think anybody's going to complain about that.
Yeah, the defense was great last year. Why mess with it? Try to bring back as many pieces as possible. If it ain't broke, don't break it, as Carl Banks would say.
And speaking of defense, what was official, which I think fell under the radar yesterday, is Valentino Blake.
Yeah.
They have added, who was with the Tennessee Titans last year, spent a few years with the Steelers, so he's been under Dick LeBeau's defense in Pittsburgh and Tennessee over the last few seasons. Great special teams player, by the way, which I don't think he gets nearly enough credit. You may recognize him more as Antoine Blake, and then he changed his name at the beginning of last year to Valentino, but he's got plenty of starting experience. Not a huge corner, but if you're going to be the fourth corner, I made this point on Twitter yesterday, John, you have to be able to play special teams, and it goes back to Leon Hall last year. Leon Hall was that jack-of-all-trades fourth corner. They moved him to safety, and there were times last year where he was a healthy scratch. He was inactive, and the rationale behind that was the Giants needed to make sure their complementary pieces could play special teams. So he, I don't think, has any question marks in that regard.
No, absolutely not. Just to go over some of his numbers the last couple of years, he played in all 16 games each of the last 3 years. Again, you mentioned, Lance, a lot of that was on special teams. But 2 years ago, he did have two interceptions, one return for a touchdown, 76 total tackles, 42 tackles last year with Tennessee. So he has had some production over the last couple of years, and always good to add depth.
Can't have enough depth, no matter what the position is, in terms of the defensive line or the corner. And, you know, this is going to be a player that's going to come in, and he's going to compete for that fourth cornerback spot. And remember, they've had a number of free agents at that position. Cody Sensabaugh, you have Leon Hall, who I referenced, you have Trevin Wade, and Cody Sensabaugh, according to reports, looks like he's going to join the Steelers. So
yeah,
with that being said, they needed to obviously evaluate who they have behind the likes of DRC, Jack Rabbit, and Eli Apple, and this is certainly an option there.
All right, let's go to the calls at 201-939-4513. It's your calls the rest of the way. We could talk about the draft, free agency, what we just heard about the Alabama prospects, whatever you want. Let's talk about it. Andrew in Stanhope, New Jersey, has been holding the longest. We'll take him first. Hi, Andrew. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'll try to get Andrew Sr. on. And I'd like to say it was an interesting topic, this group of wide receivers being the best of all time. And I think they probably are, but another group.
I mean, the Giants or NFL history? Giants or NFL history?
I mean, Giants history.
Okay.
When they had Plexico when he was young and not injured, Toomer and Chalky, who's a tight end.
Well, that doesn't count. You can't throw tight ends into a mix. And if you want to talk receivers, talk receivers. And in that case, it would be Steve Smith, Toomer, Burris, and then you would have Nix, Cruz, Manningham. And those would be the two groups that you will put into this conversation.
Exactly, but I guess this group is number one. But back
we don't
then,
know that yet.
But here's
young,
the thing, Andrew. Just out of curiosity, how can you claim that this current group is number one when Sterling Shepard has one season under his belt?
They haven't played it down
Brandon
together
Marshall
yet.
Marshall has not played in a Giants uniform. The only guy that's a proven commodity within the Giants scheme is Odell Beckham. So, I mean, I find it very hard to believe that you can automatically crown this group as number one when we have far more substance from those other two groups that John mentioned.
Only because Marshall has already played, so we know he's
But if you're saying, but if you're saying the best group in Giants history, to me it also has to be what you did in a Giants uniform,
correct?
Not what
That's
you
true.
Did before you became a Giant. Marshall's got the resume; there's no doubt about that. But he has no resume with the Giants yet.
Good point.
You're right, and they might get injured. Hopefully not before they even take the field, but. I mean, potentially, if they stay healthy, I think they could be the best. But I really, when Eli first came in, he had Tiki coming out of the backfield and Shockey, so that was a great group. But I'll put Andrew Sr., and I hope the group stays healthy. I think if they stay healthy, Beckham alone he'll probably be in the Hall of Fame, so just him alone. But here's Andrew Senior.
All right.
Andrew Senior, what's going on?
Good afternoon. Listen, my opinion that Giants should move up in the draft and get the linebacker. They've got two good linebackers that are available in the first round, and that would solidify their whole defense. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew Senior, and appreciate the call. Andrews Junior and Senior, double Andrew. Thanks for the call, guys. Appreciate it. I don't think you have to move off the big linebacker. I mean, I think, you know, Cunningham might be there.
Vanderbilt.
Hassan Reddick might be there.
Temple.
So I think those are two guys that could be real options at 23 without having to move.
I would agree with you. I think it's certainly reasonable for a linebacker to fall to them at 23. And you know,
or if you like Jared Davis out of Florida, another guy that people really like.
Certainly another option. I don't think Reuben Foster is going to be there out of Alabama. That I think we can agree with.
Unless some of those character issues really give teams pause. Which does happen. That does knock guys down the draft. Look what happened last year with Laramie Tunsil. Nobody thought that was going to happen.
And then all of a sudden there's a pleasant surprise. And
I wouldn't bet on it, but.
But it could. I mean, yeah. We've seen enough examples. I would agree with you there. I don't know, you know, what also the Giants' mindset is. You know, let's not forget here. B.J. Goodson is coming into his second year. So you have youth there. Devon Kennard, John, is also not a very old guy, and he's missed time because of injury. So there's not a lot of wear and tear there. You know, I just don't know whether or not they're going in saying, we need another young linebacker that we're going to groom. Or maybe they feel we've got enough young pieces, and if we want to take a flyer on somebody in the late rounds, whereas we'd rather bring in somebody in the first round who's going to get on the field immediately, and there's a bigger need.
I will say this, though.
I don't know where that mindset is right now.
I do think three down linebackers in this league are exceedingly rare. And if you have a chance to draft one, to me, it's never a bad idea. Because right now the Giants run very much a rotational system. They don't have one guy that's out there for every down except Jonathan Casillas. He's the only guy that's out there for all three downs right now. So Keenan Robinson was the passing guy last year with Kelvin Shepard being the run guy. Devon Kennard moved to defensive line in passing situations, didn't stay a linebacker. So if you can get, I'm going to use the name, but you don't have to be as good as him. If you get a Luke Kuechly or Sean Lee type,
can
be out there for all three downs, even if you're not playing at that level, that's a very valuable commodity, a linebacker that can play the run and play the pass equally well.
Well, there's no doubt if you could get a Luke Kuechly, I mean, I would stop the presses and I would jump and grab him and, you know, have a love affair because obviously what he could do is impressive. Well, I've said Luke Kuechly to me is by far the best linebacker in the NFL, but here's the other thing, and I think this is a fair question. How important in Spags' system is it to have that three-down linebacker? Given his reliance on some of the secondary members, how they utilize extra safeties, extra corners.
It's a good question.
I'm just wondering whether or not if you're looking at – now, granted, if you're the Giants, you can't just look at Spags' system. You have to look at long-term, how you run your defense and so forth. But I just wonder, is that a big necessity in Spags' system?
Right, well, now? It looked pretty good when Antonio Pierce was here in 07.
No doubt.
And it's funny because you're right. The safeties do a lot with Spags' defense. You're right about that. But talking to – Jonathan Casillas, I think it was in the preseason last year. I did a radio interview with him, and I was talking to him about the importance of having the same guy be the play caller or linebacker every down. And he indicated to me that, in his opinion, it's extremely important. Now, that didn't end up being the case over the course of the season. So obviously you don't have to have it, but I think – there is a level of comfort with the players, regardless of system, to have the same guy out there, like it was for John Beeson for that 1 year he was here and healthy, to be out there and commanding the defense. I do think there is some comfort and security in having that.
I think that's a fair argument. I think for the sake of continuity, the same guy setting up the defense and so forth, I'm just going based on what happened, as you just mentioned, with the game of musical chairs a bit this season, where Shepard was in for running plays, Keenan was in for passing plays, and the defense didn't seem to miss a beat under those circumstances.
Not essential, but I think it would be nice to have.
A nice luxury.
Absolutely. Yeah. Robin's down in Atlanta. Robin, you're up next on Giants.com. You're on line one. How are you?
Man, how you guys doing?
Doing great, Robin. How are you, pal?
Man, I just wanted to say something. I don't think I heard any of the callers say this, but it's good to have Deshaun Jackson out of the division.
Robin, you make a great point.
Twice a year.
I did not get one call celebrating his departure from the division. You make an excellent point, and I think you're absolutely right.
And it's going to be good. I know we're going to play at Tampa Bay, I think.
Yeah,
on the schedule.
That's a good point. So you don't necessarily miss him because of the NFC South.
There's no escape, my friend. You know, they don't even play the NFC South this year. That just happens to
that's
be the
right.
team
that's
that came
matchup.
In
I'm
the
sorry.
Same place. That's okay.
Yeah. Well, it falls – DeSean Jackson's not leaving so quickly. Let's put it that way.
All right, but once every other year, I think that's fun for me. But, you know, twice a season is – He's been killing us for a long time now.
He's a good player.
Anyway, I think the linebacker, if we do a 23rd pick, if there's a linebacker there as like a Luke Kuechly or Lee, I think we should go ahead and grab him.
I'm already
because
regretting
that's
it.
Where,
see, this is what
that's
happens.
Where, like, that's where we had like a lot of teams went after us, you know, in the middle of the field area, and tight ends and receivers and stuff, and we couldn't, you know, control like that middle of the area, the field.
Well, I will tell you this, Robin. If the Giants take a linebacker the first round, we are all going to be partying like it's 1984 because that has been a very, very long time since the Giants have taken a linebacker in the first round. Now, as John mentioned, as we've gone back and forth and you alluded to, there's quality linebackers that could be taken in the first round of this year's class. I don't think it's a bad fit for the Giants.
Reuben Foster, Zach Cunningham, Hassan Reddick being the primary three that could play middle.
But based on track record, I would be very surprised. Because it's been quite some time, as I've mentioned, in which the Giants have utilized their first-round pick on a line.
No streaks are forever, Lance Meadow.
No, every streak is meant to be broken.
Yes.
Every record is meant to be broken. That's why I said we're going to party like it's 1984 if they take a linebacker.
Because that was Carl Banks, the last time the Giants picked the linebacker in the first round.
All right, that's it, guys, man. You guys have a good day, man.
Thank you. You too.
Robin. Appreciate it.
Now, and I guess you could technically make the argument that Kiwanuka eventually played linebacker, but he was drafted as a defensive end.
I'm not going to give that exception.
No, I agree with you.
I like my narrative. My narrative is going to stay with Carl Banks. I'm not changing my narrative.
I'm with you on that.
So,
I'm with you.
Yes, he did move around. I mean, it's the same thing with Devon Kennard.
But he was drafted as a defensive end.
Correct.
So, correct.
Absolutely. You go by how they were drafted.
No argument.
Yeah.
Let's go to Scott in Virginia. He's up next. Hi, Scotty Do.
Guys, exciting time of the year. We're looking real good. I've lost track of the salary cap status. In fact, I think they're over the cap. Do you have any idea where they're at this time?
Well, I can guarantee you they're not over the cap because that's not allowed. You cannot at any point in time be over the salary cap in terms of where you are. When the Giants got JPP off that franchise tag, I think that gave a little bit more flexibility. Where they are exactly right now with all the contracts, I don't even think they're officially up on like the NFLPA website or anything like that. So anything you've heard out there, I don't even know if it's official with the league office, a lot of these moves, especially the ones that have been rumored and not made official today. So I don't think there is a number. I think the number right now is very fluid, Scott. I would probably say just off of feel and all the moves they made recently, they probably aren't swimming in cash right now to make a big splash move, but I imagine they have, you know, flexibility to do what needs to be done for the rest of this free agency process.
Okay, well, you guys are the experts, so I hope sometime this week you can give us some kind of a ballpark, because there's nothing out there, and that's why I ask.
Yeah.
So I'll make one point and give you two quick questions. My point is, I love all their signings so far in the free agency. Brandon Marshall, a great signing. They didn't see that coming, wasn't anticipated, got him at the right price. But my point number one is the minute they signed him, they at that point could only do one of two things. Fix the offensive line and the blocking in general, two or three players, or re-sign Hankins. And I'm assuming they're getting JPP back, which they did. To me, it was one or the other at that point. I know Hankins is still hanging out there. And then my other comment is I think they overpaid for three players, even though I'm happy to have them. Ellison, Jerry, and JPP. I think they're all overpaid by what I see in the league. I mean, I like having Jerry back, but he's a backup, and he's being overpaid. Ellison's being overpaid. He's coming off a major injury just a year and a half ago. And love JPP, but if you put the franchise tag on him, you usually pay him a million or so less than the franchise tag. They basically paid him at that level. So what are your thoughts on those two?
I mean, based on the numbers that are out there, they did get a million-plus per year underneath where he was under the – again, that's not official. The Giants don't release those numbers.
But based on the reports.
According to reports, I think it was like 15 and a half or
correct.
So, and
that's
the franchise
and
tag was at 17.
No,
so they did get under the tag, and they arranged that so the first-year hit, you know, can be a lot smaller than what it would have been under the franchise, number one. Number two, Ellison, I understand why you would think that, but I think a lot of people complained about – the Dwayne Harris signing, and I think, you know, based on his great special teams play this year, and then he was a very important cog as a receiver 2 years ago, I think that's worked out. And, you know, you call John Jerry a bench player. John Jerry's not a bench player. John Jerry started 32 games in the last 2 years. Or was it?
But that's
24?
Not how they're going to use him next year. Not with Fluker on
well,
the team.
We don't know that.
A great signing.
Scott, time out. Hold
I
on
would
a
not
second.
Guarantee that.
Why do you think DJ Fluker's a better player than John Jerry? He hasn't been the last couple of years. I promise you that.
All right. Well, I will say you're right. I mean, that's a good point. We'll see how it goes. I just pray they don't cut DRC to save money. They need him on the team.
Scott, look, I don't know what they're going to do, and maybe I'm going to be wrong. I would be super duper shocked, surprised, and frankly disappointed if they did let go of Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, because quite frankly, he played like a top 10 corner last year, as did the other two corners as did Janoris Jenkins, and I think El App was probably like a top 40, top 50 corner in the league. I would be shocked beyond belief if Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie was not on this team next year.
I'm with
year.
You.
As would
Thanks,
I.
Thanks, guys. Yeah.
Thank you, Scott. Good
Appreciate
stuff. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks so much for chiming in. You need three corners in this league.
Why? I mean, he's good.
His value is through the roof, especially after last season.
And quite frankly, his contract number's not that bad based on his production.
And here's the other thing. Wouldn't you have made that move already?
Of course.
That's why, I mean, I understand the speculation, and I'm not saying that the last caller was wrong, and I understand there may be some concern, but
Hankins would be here.
You
would
have made that move already, in my opinion. Yeah, so that's why I would even be more surprised if that happens after the fact. To me, JPP getting him a new contract, you could tell based on some of the moves that have followed, seems to have given them a little bit more flexibility. So that, to me, was the first domino that fell.
Which is why you didn't want him on the tag.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's why there was somewhat of an urgency to make sure that you could get it done before free agency fully ends and the draft comes, so you have a better idea of what you're working with this season as well as moving forward. But I'd be very surprised if DRC is a sacrificial lamb when it's all said and done, given his value.
He's too good.
Yeah.
He's too good. And here's what I always say. When people talk about wanting to cut people and let them go, right, here's my old response to them all the time. Do you have to replace this player? And if the answer is yes, if you have to replace them, what is it going to cost to replace them? So if you want to get another good cover corner on this roster after you cut Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, guess what? It's going to cost just as much, if not more,
on the market,
than the savings you're going to get from letting him go. So to me, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, unless the mindset is we're going to replace him with a rookie. But then it doesn't become a question of money. It becomes a question of, well, how can you guarantee that the rookie is going to come in and produce the same way DRC did?
And it's still an asset.
Yeah.
You're still then, rather than helping a different position with your, say, first-round pick, just for an example, you're using it on cornerback. So you're still hurting your roster in another spot to replace the guy that you let go, who was an excellent slot corner last year, can also play outside, by the way, and is super versatile, and it plays the ball better than any corner in the league.
Yeah, you created a void by the release, and then you prevented yourself from maybe filling a different void that you always planned to do in the first round.
See, this is why I like having Dave Dominick running the show here. Gives us good information and good numbers. He hasn't eaten his lunch today, so he's doing this on an empty stomach. It's very impressive. There have been, since Carl Banks was drafted in the first round in 1984, 119 linebackers drafted in the first round since the Giants drafted Carl Banks. 119.
Have been taken in the first round.
Yes.
Across the NFL landscape.
That's including the five taken after Carl Banks in 1984.
Well, this fully supports how rare it would be if the Giants take a linebacker this year. So, kudos to Dave for doing some homework. But also, he had to make the reference of Carl Banks 1984, which always has to be part of the discussion. The other thing is that if they take a linebacker in the first round, we have to do some type of a profile, a reminiscing with Carl Banks. Because, like I said, now he may not want to do it, but we're going to have to get him on the program.
No, he's not going to want to do it.
We're going to have to try to
get him. If we get him on the program, he's just going to sing your name for
30
minutes.
Well, then he could do that. You know what? That's still an accomplishment. Okay? That's still an accomplishment. We have to get Carl Banks just so that we can look back on all of the years that have gone by and how he's continued to hold the record. Because every year I tweet out, Carl Banks still holds the record. Last linebacker taken in the first round. So,
I would love to have you have that material taken away from you. Well, I would like that.
It will be taken away if they take a linebacker, but I can't guarantee
that's
going to happen.
I'm now officially rooting
now
for that.
Now you're rooting
just
for
to
a
have your material taken
so that
away.
I can't be continually referencing.
Yes, correct. Yeah, I'm tired of it.
There you go. So there's the incentive.
And I think it would make Dottino happy. Dottino likes linebackers.
Nah, Dottino likes the trenches, though.
A good linebacker is a part-time trench participant.
Yeah, if you asked Tino, he'd lean towards offensive lineman and defensive lineman over linebacker. If you asked him his favorite position,
I agree with that. I don't think he'd like a linebacker better than like a skill position guy in offense.
Well, that I could give you.
Linebacker's a second-tier position.
That, to me, is feasible. That I can buy. Not, though, number one. There's no way he's putting that and prioritizing that over a player that's in the trenches, embedded in the trenches, each and every single down. Okay? Yes. Getting down and dirty with Paul Dottino in the trenches. It's going to be a new program. I don't know whether the ratings will be high, but...
No, I guarantee you the ratings will not be high. They will not be high.
But trust me, it's in the works. He's been trying to speak to executives over the last
century. That's an old-school philosophy.
There you go.
Click, click, click.
Oh, you have too much fun on
your I have time. So much. Yes. I have so much Dottino old-school stuff
sometimes
here.
Sometimes old-school rubs off. Trenches, baby!
See?
Trenches, baby!
That's what happens when you spend too much time with him.
His jargon
rubs off
on everybody. He's the best.
Trenches. There you go.
He loves the trenches.
Oh, boy, does he love the trenches.
We got two calls left before we say goodbye. Let's get to Alan in Brooklyn first. Hi, Alan. How you doing?
How you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, thank you for calling in.
First, Lance, I'm a little disappointed in you. You didn't joke on John about that Ohio State blunder.
Well, listen, it was during the midst of an interview. You got to keep that in
mind. That's correct. That's correct.
Alan, listen, if it was in the midst of a flow of a conversation, I would have jumped on it like that.
Trust me. Okay. Trust me. I will hear about that later, and I can actually tell the listeners exactly how it happened. I had my list of Alabama.
See, the excuse is already
no, it's not an excuse. It was a bad mistake, and a terrible one at that. But I was looking at the list of Alabama prospects. I saw Marlon Humphrey there, and I wanted to click through to see where they had him ranked among all the cornerbacks. And then when I clicked through, when I went to the full quarterback list, I clicked on Lattimore.
Who has a similar first name.
Exactly. He was a similar first name. Yes. And that's when that page came up, and that's where I read it off. And that's where everything started to go downhill for me.
I agree. But anyway, like I was saying, about the second-round pick, because like I agree with Paul. I don't concern myself with pick number 23. We're so low, we're just going to take the best player available. It's pick 2 to 5 I'm concerned with. Defensive tackle, besides the Michigan State kid, I'm not hearing a lot about defensive tackles in the late rounds. Is there anybody else?
There are guys that are around, but this is not – like last year, if you wanted a defensive tackle, last year was your draft. You had really good players going in the third and fourth round of last year's draft, a defensive tackle. Not to say this year's class is poor, but you don't have the same number of really elite prospects. Caleb Brantley – the kid out of Florida is somebody people like. Jaron Jones, the defensive tackle out of Notre Dame. Iowa's got a kid that played in the Senior Bowl, Jaleel Johnson, that some people like. So you do have some people that are mid-round picks, but you don't have the huge number of them like you had last year, Alan.
I got you. Thank you very much for taking my call.
No problem.
Yeah, no.
If you want to try to find value this year in the middle rounds based on talking to people, you're going to find it in a few different spots. Running back. A lot of good running backs in this draft. Tight ends.
Yep.
Deep tight end draft. Cornerback.
Those two.
Deep cornerback draft. And I think maybe not quite as great as these other three. And safety's another one. You're going to get safeties late in this draft. And then on the slightly tier below those four groups, I think you have defensive end and pass rushers. That's, I think, where you're getting a lot of depth. And you know what? Even though the top-end talent isn't great, I do think you can find wide receivers in the middle rounds, like every year, that you can kind of, if you get into the right system, they can work.
No, I think that's a fair assessment. There's a number of positions this year that have depth. It may not be your typical draft because how many years do we talk about how tight ends are overwhelming? I mean, there's a lot of people that is consensus across the board where this is a very, very unique tight end group. That probably comes across once every 15 years or so in terms of how you could get some quality playmakers out of that position. And that's why, you know, I always say this, free agency sets the tone for the draft. Notice there has not been a dramatic run on tight ends in free agency this year. There has not been a big run. Okay, Martellus Bennett,
fine. That's
who,
not
by
a
the way, got a smaller contract than a lot of people thought he was going to get.
Yeah, they didn't necessarily splash money. And plus, that's not Green Bay's philosophy, too. Green Bay does not go out and make big splashes in free agency.
Where did Cook end up again?
Cook ended up in Oakland.
Oakland, thank you.
Yes. And that's also a surprise for them because in recent years, they've relied on the draft,
yeah,
the Raiders. They do not necessarily go out. I mean, the last time that you've had somebody that actually capitalized from their team was when Brandon Myers went from the Raiders to the Giants. Yeah. Ever since then, they've just been rotating rookies and so forth. So, like I said, tight end, I think there's a lot of teams that are planning on filling their voids in the draft at that position because you just have not seen a lot of guys. Dwayne Allen, he was traded. He wasn't even on the market. Not a lot of player movement on the market.
And it's funny, the ones that did move, for the most part, are guys that can block. You talked about Bennett, the Dwayne Allen trade, yep. Rhett Ellison, because you don't have a ton of blockers in this draft at tight end, but you do have a lot of good pass catchers. So I do think that's a part of
the
equation there, too.
You get the playmaker, the vertical threat in the draft, but if you want the guy that's going to be a little bit more physical, you have to spend some money.
Bingo, bango. Travis in Queens, you wrap us up. You're our cleanup hitter today, Travis. How are you?
Hey, what's up, fellas? How you guys doing?
Doing well, Travis. How are you?
Good, good, good. I just want to make a few points and get out of here.
Yeah, sure.
Like free agency, you know, one thing about free agency, people always get overpaid. So, you know, you can't really beat that. Like, I'm happy about the signs that we got, too. I'm happy that we kept everybody.
Yeah, Travis, here's the thing. In free agency, you don't get overpaid. You get paid exactly what the market dictates your worth. Now, how that compares to past markets – maybe it looks like a guy's been overpaid, but the market is what the market is. It's how capitalism works. If you had free agency and a team is willing to pay you $70 million, do you know what you're worth? You're worth $70 million. That's just how it works, man.
Oh, okay.
Free agency, and Travis, we'll let you continue. Free agency is all about timing,
which
is what you just picked up on. I mean, think about the quarterback market. Quarterbacks in free agency, it's about when your contract expires, not necessarily how good you are. And it's no disrespect to the quarterbacks, but if you
– like Mike Glennon, for example.
If you are a free agent, correct, and you're the only guy in the market, you're going to cash in on that, especially in the wake of what some of these other respected starters have been able to take home.
So, Osweiler last year, Glennon this year. I mean, these guys don't have big pass, Travis. If there's a need and a paucity
– Timing is such a big thing, and one other thing I want to piggyback on, and then Travis will let you continue, and I think
cha-ching!
It was Scott earlier in the program was talking about the JPP contract. Well, pass rushers are at a premium in the National Football League. They never get on the market, so that's another reason why you have to make sure you take care of them.
Like quarterbacks.
They're either given the franchise tag or they're given an extension before they hit the market, so you have to look at it that JPP, the Giants, the reason they gave him the franchise tag is because he went on the market. He probably would have gotten a number of other big offers.
Cha-ching!
And then the Giants would have not necessarily been in the ideal position to match that. You know, Michael Bennett for the Seattle Seahawks was recently given a contract extension. Why? Because Seattle does not want to have to all of a sudden compete with the rest of the market to splash on him. So, I mean, that's the trend in the NFL. I don't think anything was done differently with the Giants' approach than what we've seen with other teams who have similar positions.
And the salary cap keeps going up. As the salary cap continues to go up, so will salaries. It's just the way it works. Finish up, Travis. Sorry about that.
That's cool. Lance really loved that word, trend, too.
I love it. Absolutely. But I will drink to that.
So come that pick, though, do you think – because, if Hankins stays, clearly if we work out a deal where we keep him, clearly we're not going to go defensive tackle, I don't think. But let's say he's not there. You think they would go 23, the kid at Michigan State, if he's there, or Zach Cunningham? I got one more question after that.
I think a defensive tackle is a possibility at 23. I wouldn't rule it out. I would look for more of a defensive lineman who's a bit more versatile, you know, somebody that can get to the quarterback and stop the run. But, I mean, if Hankins doesn't come back, you know, their options right now, Jay Bromley is still in the mix. But outside of Jay Bromley, there's not nearly as much depth as defensive tackle on this roster as it stands right now than there is with respect to defensive end. And listen, Jerry Reese, based on his track record, he likes defensive linemen. I would not be surprised if a defensive lineman is taken. Yes, you're talking about pass rushers, guys that get to the quarterback.
He likes DTs in the second round. He has not picked a defensive tackle in the first round.
But what if it's – and I'm not saying Jonathan Allen's going to be there, but Allen is a guy that projects perhaps who you could switch.
And like Aaron Donald is another type of guy a few years ago.
So that's why I said if it's a versatile guy, Travis, I'm with you. But you're right. The ones who usually go in the first round for the Giants are strictly they put their head down and they knock the quarterback.
Yeah, Travis, I would say probably I think, frankly, it's unlikely that either a linebacker or a defensive tackle go in the first round. Based on the draft class, in my opinion, I think it's more likely it's a linebacker than a tackle, just because of, I think, where guys fit in terms of the overall big board. And I think there are more linebackers, and I'm looking at Hassan Reddick and Zach Cunningham specifically, that would fall between 20 and 30 than I think defensive tackles. I haven't seen any defensive tackles really, you know, mocked to go in that 20 to 25 area.
But based on you guys' personal opinion, if it was out of them two, like, who would you take?
I would take Zach Cunningham myself.
But here's the thing. Reddick, though, is projected by some as perhaps a defensive lineman. So do they look at him as maybe having a little bit more versatility and he's more intriguing to the Giants? I like Cunningham too, but I would maybe make the argument Reddick, to me, fits more in the profile of what the Giants look for.
Oh, see, I thought my choice was Cunningham or the defensive tackle.
Oh, no, I thought maybe Travis, were you talking about Cunningham versus Reddick or you were throwing in a defensive tackle?
No, I was talking about the tackle and the linebacker.
I'm with Lance. Travis, I'm with Lance. If I have the choice between Cunningham and Reddick, I would take Reddick because I think he has more physical upside. And like Lance said, I think if he doesn't, and I think the question about Reddick is whether or not he can be a coverage guy, right? You don't know if he can go from that pass rusher and coverage to be that middle linebacker that can backpedal and do all that stuff in the pros. Well, here's the good thing. If he can't do that, you have a job for him on third down anyway. You know what I mean? And I think Lance made a good point. Exactly, right.
Oh, okay. And my last question is this. Like in the draft, right, like the first round, okay, let's take any position. Let's take cornerback.
Okay.
How many positions come out of that position that you say, oh, okay, like it's like this is a great position first round draft? What would be the number? Like 8, maybe?
I mean, 8's a lot. I mean, I think 8.
That's a lot. Okay.
I mean, I think 8 would be epic. I mean, if you get if you get 6 from one position group that all go in the first round, I think you're being told that it's a pretty top heavy group at that position. Now, some positions, obviously, like this year won't be one of them, but I think a lot of times you'll get 5 wide receivers in the first round just because it's a premium position. You'll get, you know, 5 corners in a lot of these drafts because it's a premium position. You'll get 5 pass rushers because it's a premium position. If you're looking at a premium position like defensive end or corner, I think 8 is probably, you know, the high end is where you'll get. But for a position, let's say, like, you know, for linebacker, if you get 3 or 4 linebackers in the first round, that's a lot. If you get 3 or 4 running backs in the first round, that's a lot.
Yeah, that would be.
So it really depends on the position. You know what I mean?
Wow. I just wonder, though, I wonder in a year where not a lot of quarterbacks are expected to go in the first round, does that present an opportunity for a position group to get to 7 or 8?
I agree with that.
This could be the year. Yeah.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if 7 or 8 corners went in the first round this year. That's how deep the class is.
Yep.
Okay. And did Odell Beckham, did he say anything about Brandon Marshall? Like, happy to have him anything?
No, I've not seen it.
You know, Travis, I got to be honest with you. Me and Lance are only slightly better than Paul Dottino in terms of monitoring these guys' like social media and Instagram accounts. We don't do it. We're just we don't. I frankly don't care. I got to be honest with you. So he might have thrown something up on Twitter or thrown something on Instagram that I don't know about, but I haven't noticed it. And quite frankly, look, of course he's happy. Why wouldn't he be?
Yeah.
Right. All right. No,
thanks, Travis.
All right, fellas. Take care.
Appreciate it, man.
All right, Travis.
We have to go back and check out. I'm curious to see, like, number of
the record for the most.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that'd be
good. I don't know.
I'm surprised Dave hasn't jumped on
he's,
the number.
He's thinking about one thing right now.
He's thinking about lunch.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah, because we're a little beyond 1 p.m. Eastern, so the tummy is starting to, you know, remind him.
Absolutely.
Lunchtime, yes.
Good absolutely. Show, Mr. Meadow.
Absolutely. Good discussion.
So tomorrow will be Lance and Dottino. Then we're going to have some moving parts on Thursday and Friday, unfortunately. I have to get this surgically repaired, so I'm
going
to be out for probably a couple of days, maybe one more. No one's happier than him because it means he gets to talk more and you get to listen to Lance more. He's thrilled.
Oh, absolutely.
No one's happier to have more Lance Meadow on the other than Lance Meadow.
To get Schmelk sidelined is a gift.
No, let me tell you, he's pumped.
Beautiful offseason.
For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. And Odell Beckham apparently on Facebook did say a welcome brudda, which is, of course,
okay.
So, sweet
so
brudda,
there you go.
Which is fine. Awesome.
So that's official.
There you go. So I will say goodbye. Wish me luck. Hopefully I come back. I'll have all my digits in place, which will be fantastic. And that's it. So hopefully I'll see you on Friday. Otherwise, it'll be Monday. Thanks for joining us. tomorrow. We're trying to get somebody on from Clemson to talk Clemson Tiger prospects. We don't have someone locked in yet. We're working on it. So make sure you stay tuned to Giants.com. We'll be with you. Thanks for joining us. We're off to lunch. We'll see you next time, everybody. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.